Welcome to Burning River Radio. This is obviously the baseball edition because we're recording it during the basketball game. That's really bad. We're really bad human beings. Anyway, I'm Joe Koblitz at Burning River BB on Twitter. I'm here with Justin Latta at JL underscore baseball. And the Indians kind of suck this week.
I think it's a little harsh. I would say they suck this
I think
weekend.
You lose. Okay. Now, I listened to some of what Friday night's game against the Royals on the radio. And, of course, Tom Hamilton loves the Royals. He loves them so much.
I don't get it.
He wants to marry them all at the same time. But he's talking about how they were in last place. I think now the White Sox have surpassed them. Maybe with the loss today, the Royals are back in last. I don't know. Either way, they're towards the bottom. They were one of the worst teams in the American League. When I checked last, they were like the second worst team in the American League. And he's talking about why is everybody talking about them selling? They could win a couple games and they're right back in this thing.
I mean, he's not wrong.
And I guess they did win a couple games. They beat the Indians on Friday and Saturday. And it's just like, how can you not? The one that really bugged me was Saturday's game. Carlos Carrasco, you've got your number two ace going, and he can't even go five innings. And he ended up giving up 12 runs. Danny Salazar pitches in relief and gives up a run. And the defense was so horrific. It was revolting. I mean, I haven't seen the Indians' defense be that bad. 2011?
Probably. Yeah, well, I don't know. 2015 was pretty bad when you had Brandon Moss, David Murphy, and Nick Swisher, Michael Bourne, and all trying to play outfield / first base in some combination. Mm-hmm. Plus, you still had his dribble at shortstop.
Well, yeah. I did want to say, and Astrobal is like the perfect guy to go with. We've really grown accustomed to much improved play of late. Like, if an error is made, like one of the errors was Jose Ramirez on a play. It wasn't an easy play. It was a high bounce short in the infield, and he's running to his left, and it glanced off his glove into left field. And to me, that could have been a hit. It could have been an error. They counted as an error. There was another play that Lindor almost made that was similar that was counted a hit. Those plays are not easy plays to make, and we expect them to be made every single time. Whereas years ago, you wouldn't expect anyone to get even close to those balls, and you know, even on a routine play to shortstop, you're kind of holding your breath. I never hold my breath with Lindor. It's just never happened. I'm always assuming that he's going to get the out. And same thing with Kipnis. He let a ball go through his legs yesterday. But I never expect Kipnis to make that error. I'm always expecting him to make every single play that he gets to him. And I think we've kind of grown accustomed to a higher level of defense. So when you go to Fangraphs and you see that the Indians are negative 10 runs below average defensively and 26th out of 30 teams, it's a bit of a surprise.
I'm not sure what the deal is. Like, I'm sure yesterday affected, but Lindor was down.
No, they were negative in a lot of they were categories. Negative before that.
Yeah.
Well before that. And I just clicked one more button and I'm gonna tell you exactly what it is. They are negative 11 runs just considering outfielders.
Yeah, the outfield's been worse than any
total entire unit. Negative 11 when you just consider outfielders. And obviously that's the problem. And that should get us into our first subtopic of the night, which is that Bradley Zimmer has been absolutely huge for this outfield. And his use has been confusing. After their loss, I guess this would be Saturday night, where he didn't play at all. It was the first game this year he didn't even get a pinch hit or pinch run appearance or come in defensively or whatever. He didn't come in at all. It was the first time in his major league career that he missed a game. After that game, Francona said, hey, maybe I shouldn't have benched him. maybe I should have played him even though it was a lefty.
No.
And to me, you didn't hear that?
No, I didn't. And I'm stupid now that I hear it.
Yeah, no, he came out after that game because we had complained prior to the game. And maybe it was that. No, it wasn't. It wasn't Saturday. It was Friday night's game that he was set out.
Yeah,
it was the game where they didn't score. Yeah, they didn't score a single run all night. So you can't do any worse than not scoring a single run. So having him in for defensive purposes would have been better than, you know, not scoring any runs and having him on the bench. So after that, Francona said maybe he should have played him against the lefty, and then he played Sunday against the lefty and didn't have a great game, but, you know, he walked and played defense. I mean, that's what he's there for. So I do think – I personally think he's going to play every day now. We've talked about, like, three episodes in a row, right, about him platooning?
Yeah. And how it needs to stop?
Yeah, that it makes no sense at all. So anyway, Lonnie Chisenhall's coming back, assuming for the next game, which would be Tuesday against Colorado in Colorado. And, of course, we know there's tons of fly balls hit into Colorado. And it'll be very interesting to see how they use Lonnie Chisenhall. If they decide that crazy thing where they put him in center field again, or if they do the smart thing and play Lonnie in right and Brantley in left and Zimmer in center. And that's just the first half of it. The second half would be who gets sent down for Lonnie.
Yeah, I don't know.
Should I say sent out, I guess?
Sent out.
Because, yeah, I'm looking this up really quick. Bradley Zimmer has right now a 12.4 UZR per 150 in center. I really wanted to see Chisenhall's. It's not on the front page, which
is
good. In center,
it's not good.
But that's the point. Naquin's was negative 25.4. But he only played six games. Jackson's is negative 31.7.
Yeah, he's not good in center field either.
Chisenhall is negative 27.9. So the point is, the Indians have one positive defensive center fielder, and it is Bradley Zimmer.
And he's the only healthy, good defensive center fielder in the organization right now because Greg Allen's
hurt. Yeah, Allen's going to miss at least half a year, right? Maybe the whole thing.
I don't think it was supposed to be that long, actually. But either way, it doesn't matter. He's not coming up this year now, especially.
He had the hammy bone surgery, right? Or was that someone else?
Yeah, he had some sort of wrist surgery. I thought the timeline was like 8 weeks. So I don't think he'll be out all year. But even when he comes back, regardless, he's going to be a non-factor now.
Yeah, they won't bring him up.
How well Zimmer played.
The arises from Daniel Robertson, who hasn't been the greatest,
but
has come through and he's come through in so many clutch situations. He's a great base runner. He's a really exciting, he's a talented outfielder, but I mean, he brings more excitement to it, especially because he's got a great arm. And we saw that arm the first game he ever played in spring training. He threw a guy out at home, and there were people talking about that throw for 2 weeks after at games. It was, hey, were you here when he threw that guy out at home? And I think he threw a guy out at third like a couple games later. So, I mean, he's got talent. He's interesting. They can't send him to AAA, as far as I'm aware. It's hard to find option stuff on guys like him. But as far as I'm aware, they cannot send him to AAA. They'd have to expose him to waivers, and then he'd have to accept an assignment to send him out. And you don't want to do that because you don't want to lose him because he's talented and because Guyer's still hurt and Almonte's still hurt. And
well, I think he's forgotten Almonte at this point.
Probably
no longer going to be a factor.
Well, and Naquin's still hurt. He's still on the deal. I thought that was a 7 day thing. Come back. I even wrote a piece about him when his 7 days were up. I was like, okay, he's coming back, and he should come back to the majors and get another shot. And then
no.
Well, this was before Zimmer came up, even.
No.
Because I didn't think they'd bring Zimmer up, so I was saying, yeah, bring him back up, so at least we have someone out here who can run, and he's still hurt. So my solution to the whole thing, and I doubt they'll do it because it makes too much sense. is send Eric Gonzalez back to AAA. And then everyone will go, oh, no, you're crazy. Then they won't have a utility infielder. And I've said this for two straight years. Jose Ramirez is a utility infielder, and he can play every day. He prefers to play second base. When Kipnis came back, he was joking, but he was kind of mad.
He was, yes. I think that's true. Plus,
it was legit. And Andre Knott talked about it, and it was legit. He was not happy he was going back to third base. If he's the utility infielder, then he can play second base once every 2 weeks, which should make him happy. He can play shortstop, which may or may not make him happy. That might give him flashbacks. But, yeah, so he can play shortstop. He can play third base. He can play second base. He can play outfield if he needs to. You don't need Eric Gonzalez to play once a week when you have Ramirez, and he would still play every single day. I like calling him a don't call him a utility infielder. He's still playing every single day. He will play at third base 6 out of 7 days, but maybe on that seventh day he'll play someplace else just to give somebody a day off. It makes sense. You keep Robertson. You have that extra right-handed bat, which is really important to Francona. It makes complete sense, and I can't think of a better solution, because you don't lose Gonzalez when you send him to AAA. You want him back next week, you wait 10 days and you bring him back.
Yeah.
No? You have a better solution?
No, I think their only concern is if one of the infielders gets hurt. I know Robertson's
but then you can bring
it
back if
that's about it.
But if somebody goes on the DL, then you don't even have to wait 10 days.
You also have to account for the rest of the game. Like, if Jose Ramirez is playing third and goes down in the first inning somehow, and knock on wood, because I don't want to say it and have it happen because I'll freak myself out, nobody can play third. Robertson's got experience at second, but not a lot. And
I would honestly, I'd put Robertson at third for a couple innings. If you have an injury,
You would, but they won't.
No, I think they might. They've done crazier things than that. They put him in center field.
He's a second baseman. I don't see it.
I don't know. Robertson is a second baseman. I've seen him play second. I've seen him play both corner outfielder. Like, I've seen him play a lot of positions more than he's played. I'm pretty sure I saw him play third this spring.
I am with you. I want him to stay.
He can play pretty much everywhere.
I think he provides a unique spark. He's not Michael Martinez. Like, that's the thing. He is everything that they wanted Michael Martinez to be, but he's not better.
Yeah.
He's a better hitter. He's a better runner. He's a better fielder. Appreciates him in the clubhouse.
Yeah. I think you said something on Twitter today about Austin Jackson, about not wanting to lose him either.
I don't want
to lose him either. He's hitting really well right now. Well, you have to lose somebody. And Eric Gonzalez to me is the most.
Here's the question: Do you think anybody's going to claim? Is going to claim Robertson? Like, if so, if they designated Austin Jackson, somebody would claim him. I don't know for sure if they would claim Robertson.
I don't think there's a man on the Indians team that could get put on waivers and not get claimed.
Probably
I think so. Every single player on this team would get claimed immediately.
I think you're right. I mean, if I was a team that had the Mariners might claim
Martinez got claimed.
Who?
Michael Martinez.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, they traded him. There was no reason for the Rays to give up something if cash. There was no reason for them to make that trade unless he was getting claimed on waivers.
Right.
Yeah, so that.
I don't know. I would agree with you. It's just I don't think. I don't think they're going to risk having to use Robertson. I mean, I know he played a little second base. I don't know if I saw him anywhere else, but I know.
He hasn't officially played any infield position other than second base in the majors, maybe even in the minors. I can look that up real quick. I think I looked it up before and he hadn't. But I'm sure he's capable of it. I guess I can see what you're saying, where that really does kind of decrease their ability. But I just said the outfield defense is like, you can't take from the outfield. You can't keep taking from.
Well, they have to stop putting Jackson in center field.
Yeah, and that's what we said. Zimmer should be starting all the time. And maybe you have to then take someone from the outfield. But you're not going to cut Jackson. You're not going to cut Zimmer. You're not, or cut and BFA and send to AAA are all the same, from what I'm saying, essentially, right now. I mean, Guyer's obviously going to start every day. But
they have a real problem to think about when Guyer comes back.
Well, I think that's when Jackson does go. You can't have Jackson and Guyer on the same team, and Guyer's locked up long term. So,
but what if Jackson's still hitting this well?
Then maybe you can trade him, but you can't keep him over
Guyer.
Yeah,
probably not.
I saw third base
on
there. No, it's not popping up. It looks like he played one game at third base, Robertson did, in the AAA with the Padres.
So he's not at third base.
4 years ago.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah, and he has played a lot in the outfield. He still played considerably at second base.
So he's an outfielder and second baseman.
Yeah, essentially.
Which is fine, but I mean,
him the way he's playing right now. And the other option, which apparently Jensen Lewis and them were talking about on the postgame show, which I don't watch. I watch Twitter, and sometimes they comment on these things, was they were talking about sitting down Zimmer so that they wouldn't have to cut Robertson. And that's just the most retarded shit I've ever heard.
That's really the worst option.
Because then you like we've already said, he's your only defensive outfielder. He's the only guy that's decent at all. Everybody else is awful.
When he
you know,
up,
how are you gonna?
When he came up, Andre Knott had said they weren't calling him up to fix the offense or help the offense. Essentially, they were calling him up to make the outfield defense better because they knew they had a problem. He's fixed the problem in center field so far, and he's hitting. So why would they send him down and go back to putting Chisenhall in center, Robertson and Jackson in center? That
would be such a terrible split. And it's not like the Indians were great before everyone got hurt. The Indians haven't been great at all this entire season. They've had some good moments and they've had some really bad moments. And like I said, and the defense isn't there. The offense is overall negative. It's below average in baseball. The pitching staff has been below average. So it's not like you can say things were great before Zimmer came up, so let's just go back to that. It wasn't great. Brantley's hitting great. Brantley's perfect. The way he's doing right now, he's great. Even defensively, he hasn't been embarrassing. He doesn't move very fast, but he knows how to play the wall. There was a play the other day where I can't remember if he threw the guy out or he almost threw a guy out at second. I think he did throw a guy out at second because it was after
he threw the ball off the wall. Yeah.
He knows how to play that wall better than anyone else because he's played, 1,000 games out there?
But that's the other half of this defensive thing with Zimmer is that, unfortunately, Brantley doesn't cover a lot of ground in left field. He's not great defensively outside of his arm. So you need – not only do you need Zimmer to make up for your inefficiencies in right, you also need him there to make up for Brantley's inefficiencies now too, because the only positive defensive thing about him is his arm.
Yeah, and that, I mean, it's almost like the infield is too, because where Lindor has such great range that it doesn't matter that Ramirez and Kipnis don't really have great range. They have average range. But Lindor's range makes up for the difference on both sides of that and makes them look like great fielders because they don't have to get to as many balls. And I think you put Chisenhall in right, he's a pretty decent right fielder most of the time. I think that fixes it. I do think that Almonte's got to be gone. Like, he's got options, so you can send him back. You got to send him back to AAA. There's no reason at all for him to be on this team. This is supposed to be a World Series contending team. It's time to stop goofing around with this shit.
He was better than Naquin when Chisenhall came back from the shoulder injury.
Naquin played six games this year.
Well, yeah, I know. But, I mean, it was literally the first week of the year, and I had a decision to make, and it was. I remember writing about it. I wrote that
Yeah.
Almonte had to stay because he was having great at bats at the time, and Naquin was doing the same crap that made him horrible at the end of the year last year. And Almonte proved to be better for April, but after April, he just kind of fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And Zimmer is, I mean, I remember coming into the year, and even last year they didn't do it when he came back. They never put Almonte in center field, and by almost every metric, he was their best defensive center fielder coming into this year. And even last year, they wouldn't do it.
Well, we say it a lot. They must have different metrics than we do.
Yes, that's.
And I don't trust Uzi. And I use UZR per 150 earlier. I don't trust that. I don't trust defensive runs saved. I don't trust any of these defensive. I don't obviously don't trust errors and fielding percent.
No, none of them. I don't know what you're trying.
Even things like our like assists and things like that from the outfield. You've seen Jonas Cespedes boot a ball 20 feet and then pick it up and throw the guy out. That assist if he hadn't booted the ball in the first place. You know, so that's kind of a break-even play. It's not an above-average play. It's, you know, if anything, it's a below-average play because he messed up and then the runner messed up by testing the arm.
And you have to have that weapon.
It's very difficult to judge defense beyond actually watching the game. And I've seen Zimmer track stuff down that I haven't seen an Indian center fielder do in years.
He hasn't even really made a great play yet. I think he's just made
running catches where we don't have guys that can run that fast
or cover that much ground. Yeah, I mean, he hasn't made any Kevin Kiermaier or any Kevin Pillar type plays, but he just covers a lot of ground. He gets to a lot of ground, fly balls that other guys aren't getting to because they don't run that well and they don't have that range. They don't have that natural instinct. Zimmer is a natural center fielder. They forced Chisenhall into it. They tried to force Guyer into it. That didn't work. Robertson's not. Jackson can't play center anymore.
Robertson tries to run fast, but he those little tiny legs. And I can talk about.
His speed works better in the infield than it does the outfield.
Yeah.
Which is another reason I like him because when he hits a ground ball, and it seems like I know their league average hitting in the double plays this year. It seems like they're hitting into more double plays, but he's one of those guys who they very rarely double up.
Well, yeah, when you got short legs, you can pick him up and put him down quicker.
And he's a guy on the team that I actually don't hate it when he bunts.
I don't know. I'm not talking about bunting today.
Did you? Oh, you're blocked by him, but I figured I'd bring it up. I think it was Friday night. They were losing. They couldn't get a run across. And I think Lindor hit the double play. And your favorite writer tweets that, well, who's complaining about Lindor bunting now when he's hitting the double plays? Shouldn't he bunt more? And it was just the responses were all the same. You're an idiot. Shut up. Go away. No one wants him to bunt.
Everyone's going to hit into a double play every once in a while. Encarnacion hits into a double play, but you want him to bunt now?
I know. I saw the tweet, and I was like, really? So he hits a double play, and you're like, oh, he should bunt and give up. Definitely for sure make an out. Like, hit a ball, get two outs, or put the ball on the ground intentionally and for sure make an out. Because, I mean, what if the guy who's trying to relay a double play makes an error?
Yeah, well, the Royals the other day did that when I think it was against Carrasco when he was struggling. One of the guys sack bunted and Carrasco caught it in the air, and it was like, well, thanks for the free out. Like he hadn't gotten an out in the inning right to that point, and it was like, thank you very much.
I mean, it didn't help him in the end, but you're right. Yeah, I gave him a free out.
Yeah, I did want to talk about Danny Salazar for a minute, just real quick. He was supposed to start on Wednesday against Colorado. They said it as soon as he went to the bullpen, and we talked about it last week. As soon as he went to the bullpen, they said, okay, he's in the bullpen, but he's going to start next Wednesday because we want to bump Kluber back. And then they're like, well, no, he hasn't done enough work in the bullpen. We're going to keep him there.
And there's two off days.
And they're going to bump Tomlin. Tomlin will be on normal rest instead of getting extra days off.
And Clevenger will by default.
Yeah, assuming they will continue with this, it's also possible they bring Bauer back because instead of Tomlin, because Bauer only pitched an inning and two-thirds on Sunday
I think that sounds pretty likely. That's what Francona said. It's pretty likely they'll bring Bauer back. And he might even be available out of the bullpen one of the 2 days.
Well, that's what they – well, he couldn't be both. He'll either start or be in the bullpen, I guess. To me, it would make more sense to start him instead of Tomlin on Wednesday. But, I mean, how do you – like, what do you feel about Salazar getting bumped? Like, to me – and we had talked about this. I saw him making like 3 or 4 starts in June or by July 2nd because there's another doublehead. There's 2 doubleheaders and then there was that game. So I thought he'd make 3 or 4 starts within a month. And then they would judge him by those starts. Yeah, they judge him by those starts whether he should be back in the rotation full time. But now they're taking one of those starts away. So now how are we going to judge like how he's playing?
Maybe they don't. Maybe, I mean, when they put Carrasco in the bullpen, they left him there until, I think, August, wasn't it?
I don't remember exactly.
I mean, I'll go look, but I'm pretty sure they put him in the bullpen pretty quickly in 2015.
Like, I can get the game by game up.
I don't think he's going to start until August again. I'll have to look.
14.
Was it 2014?
Yeah, 2015. He was in a rotation right. The whole year. So he made 4 starts, and then they put him in the bullpen. Although looking at these now, he was way worse than Salazar was.
He was very bad. I don't know. Yeah, but
those are really ugly numbers. And even in the bullpen, he gave up 2 consecutive games. He gave up 2 runs in each one. And, he rejoined the rotation.
He didn't make another start until August 10th, yeah. And it's funny because the appearance before that, he was not great. I think they needed him. I think they needed him to start against New York on August 10th because there had to be some sort of injury.
Yeah, I hope he's not in the bullpen that long. I really see it as a total waste of potential. He's way too good for that.
Well, I don't know.
So when I saw it really bugged me when I saw that they weren't going to start him on Wednesday.
I think you give it the whole month of June. I do. I mean, he'll probably have to start the doubleheader. But if they do it for a month and it works, I guess. Because think about it long term for the playoffs, I guess. I mean, it keeps Clevinger up. Clevinger probably can't be sent back. You don't want to do that. I know your solution is to hide Tom in the bullpen and like a right fielder and never hear from him again. That's not going to happen. I don't know. I mean, if it sets up this way, it's not going to last the whole year. Someone's going to get hurt. Something's going to happen. But if it somehow played out where they could go into the playoffs and have Salazar, you know, as kind of the way Andrew Miller was last year, then why not?
Yeah, I guess I could see that if he's, you know, if he's used to pitching in the bullpen by then you have a guy who can pitch 3 innings in the bullpen in the postseason. That would be pretty exciting. It's so far away though. I think you need to win games first. There's still, I didn't see what the Twins did today, but they're either in first, tied for first, or in second place still. And they've been goofing around with this. You got to win some games now.
Well, I think you're always looking long term, though, especially this year.
Well, it's just like, I mean, last year, no one knew Carrasco was going to break his hand. No one knew Kluber was going to strain his groin the week before the playoffs. No one knew Bauer was going to start filleting his fingers. Like,
right, these things will work themselves out. But I mean, if you keep
Salazar, but so that's my point out, is you don't know, you can't plan for the playoffs and say, oh, Salazar is going to be our long man out of the bullpen in the postseason on June 4th.
True.
Yeah. So I would just like to see him continually, maybe not every 5 days, but get him some starts in there.
So you're essentially saying they should operate with a 6-man rotation.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I went on as soon as I heard they were putting him in the bullpen. It's not a perfect six. Yeah, because my preference would have My preference would have been to store Tomlin back there, but he has been pitching better of late, so it's kind of hard to rag on him too bad.
And like you said, you can't get rid of him because he will get claimed.
Absolutely. Well, you can't get rid of anybody. There's nobody in the rotation other than Clevinger that you can move, and you don't want to move Clevinger.
Salazar has an option, but
who, Salazar? I still don't think he does.
He does. I mean, it's been said everywhere. He does.
Oh, okay.
So, but they also said that it does him no good to go in AAA because hitters will swing and miss at everything in AAA that he throws.
Yeah.
That's why they're in AAA, because they have no plate discipline, most of them.
All right. There was one other thing I wanted to talk about tonight, and it could be a gigantic topic, but we can keep it kind of small, I guess. So the city of Goodyear, where I live in Arizona, so by proxy, I did this, loaned the Cleveland Indians $10 million.
Good for you. Wow. I know you had that kind of money.
Yeah, it didn't really make national news, but my tax dollars went to the city of Goodyear loaning the Cleveland Indians $10 million, and what they're going to do is revamp their clubhouse down by the practice fields. So it's nothing that the fans will ever really see. They're going to add an extra weight room. They're going to add more offices for people who are down there all year long. I think what they found was way more players stay there during the off season than they ever expected. So it was kind of set up. So either, you know, in spring training, you have the major leaguers there, and then the major leaguers leave and the minor leaguers come in, and then the minor leaguers are there all the way around year round to spring training again. I think what they found was way more major leaguers were there than they expected, and way more minor leaguers that didn't have to be there. Like the youngest guys have to be there for instructional league, and then the AFL guys, I don't know if they work out there or not, or they just work out with their teams. But, you know, they're in Arizona at least. But I think way more people than they expected stayed around all year, which is great. It's great dedication. But they didn't have enough room.
The leaguers that do that aren't getting paid while they're there. Just a quick reminder.
Well, I think they get fed at least.
But they're not getting paid either in the off season. Except
yes, they're not getting a salary.
They get paid. If they're there in like December or January, they're not getting paid. They're just there on their own accord, not making money, which is essentially an internship or slave labor, whatever you want to call it. But go ahead.
Well, they're not actually, but they're not working either. They're not like providing a service.
Yeah, they're there on their own accord, sure.
Yeah, they're doing it on their own. I have to pay to go to the gym. They get to go to the gym for free. That's essentially, this is their gym. They live here. They're going to the gym there. They have much better equipment and trainers than I do.
That's fair enough.
So I think it's great dedication by the minor leaguers to do it and the major leaguers, the ones that come down here all year. All winter, or come when spring training report date is February 10th and they're here December 31st or whatever, January 2nd, you know, spend the holidays with the family and then immediately come back out. It's incredible. So the team is showing them some love back, and they got this $10 million loan so that they could do that from the city of Goodyear. And one thing interesting about it was that the term of the loan lasts 10 years. But the Indians, I think it's 10 years. Maybe it's longer than that. The term of the loan extends past when the Indians will be leasing the stadium. They signed I think it was a 10-year lease initially. It might have been a 20-year lease. Now I'm getting my years all mixed up. Whatever. But it goes, the loan and the lease don't match up quite evenly. Is the point. So they're wondering, they may try to use it as a bargaining chip to get the Indians to stay longer. And from everything I've heard, the Indians love being here, and there's no reason they wouldn't want to stay in Goodyear. And I certainly hope they stay in Goodyear. But it brings up the other interesting facet of simply stadiums that are owned by public money going to stadiums. Now, I never go public with my political affiliations, although you could probably figure out if you tried hard enough based on who I follow on Twitter and that type of thing. But I am completely against stadium owned by the public, essentially. And I'll throw in the caveat, unless they're really owned by the public. Goodyear ballpark is really Goodyear ballpark is really owned by the city of Goodyear. The Indians only use it for a short period of time, and then after that it's used for, like, they just did all the city of Goodyear graduations, all the high school graduations, the college graduations here, they all just took place there. They use it for movie nights, they use it for special events, and the city makes money off of those things and brings back money. So if the city makes money off of a stadium, it kind of makes sense, because then the public is getting something back from it. You know, I still don't prefer it. I would still prefer it if private. But at least the public made an investment and the public gets their money back. In Cleveland, that's not the case. Right? The Indians control everything to do with the stadium. Maybe they pay rent to the city. You know, they may give some money back. But the city should be the ones making the majority of the money. And then the Indians, like, from the stadium itself, especially with things like they're having a concert there soon, some country guy I don't listen to. You know, like, on something like that, the city should make 100% of the money, because the city owns the stadium. The city built the stadium. Yeah, but then they don't. Because I think actually the Indians own it officially right now.
Well, if you want to be technical, I guess Progressive owns it. I don't know.
Well, they know, they own the naming rights, but that's right. Only, it was like $1 million. That's not that big a deal.
That comes up pretty soon, doesn't it?
I don't know. I was looking up. So I think 2004 was the first year of it, but they've re-upped since then.
The naming rights expire. 16 years, and they signed it in 08. So we got a while.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
That's not going away for a while.
I wouldn't worry about that. Yeah, and if it bugs you, oh well, just move on.
Still go to games.
But the point is, like, that on all these deals, and there's more and more people coming out now against the stadium. San Diego is the most recent one with the Chargers, where they wanted a new stadium, and they're like, no, and now the Chargers have to play in this awful soccer field in L.A. for 2 years while they're waiting. You know, but exactly. These cities are finally coming up and saying, no, we don't want to own the stadium. Gila River Arena in Glendale, where the Coyotes play, is like that, where the city owns the arena and the city doesn't even want the Coyotes there anymore.
Again?
Like, we're not. Yeah.
It's the second time and they absolutely get rid of them.
Well, they're trying to boot them out. It's a long, drawn out process. It's been going on for years. They changed the name to the Arizona Coyotes a couple years ago, so that they'd be safe no matter where they moved, as long as it's within the state. But, I mean, it's almost always a bad deal, because the teams, like, especially for a single-use stadium like Progressive Field, that where can the city then make their money back on this field? Because they put the money in for the renovations. That Syntax money all goes to the stadium. Yeah, to me, if you're going to pay for the stadium as a taxpayer, you have to get something back from it. And you can't just say, well, you get the right to have a baseball team. Cleveland's had a baseball team since 1874.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say, like, the city can't support a baseball team if they don't buy the stadium. The original stadium wasn't taxpayer supported. It was built by railroad magnates who put the stadium right at the edge of where the railroads were.
A lot of the renovations on the stadium in the last couple of years were funded by Delaware North, which is their food service company. So a lot of taxpayer money didn't go to those renovations. They did use the Syntax for the scoreboard, but that was already what was allotted to them from the first Syntax extension. I think it was extended in 2013. They approved the extension of the Syntax.
So I think it was more recent than that, because I remember I was actually railing. I didn't do a whole lot of lobbying on that one, but I did tweet at least a couple times that people should vote against it, and of course it passed. But I mean, whenever they give you an option, do you want a tax or do you not want a tax? The answer should pretty much always be no, I don't want the tax.
Well, because they, like you said, they try to tell you that if you don't vote yes, then the team's going to leave, and you know, they try to fear, make you fear that, oh, we're gonna lose all this money that the stadium creates, and you know,
Major League Baseball is a giant corporation. The NFL is even bigger. I think the NBA is a little smaller, but they all can survive without your taxpayer money by any stadiums. They can do it, and when the owners own them, then they have to feel more loyalty to stay there. If the owner of the team owns the stadium, then now they have to not only sell the stadium but also sell the team. This is what happened early on with not even the Indians, the Spiders. that was the team I was talking about with League Park when they built that. It was built by the Robeson brothers who owned railroads, and then they eventually had to sell the team and the stadium when the Spiders kind of disappeared. you know, but they own like that. It makes it a lot harder for a team to move when they have that kind of investment in the local community. I just wish. I don't even think that the team doesn't need to own it. It's just somebody other than the city.
Right.
It just doesn't make sense.
I'm 100% with you on that. I mean, it's one thing to have, I guess, taxes for certain things, like the Syntax built it, obviously, but I mean, if it's for renovations, it's one thing.
Well, it's still Syntax.
Right.
For the renovations. And for everything, for the queue, I mean, for all of them. They all get paid up for that.
To pay for it, I mean, the stadium's got, I don't know how many more years we paid off. But their lease extension is until 2023, which is kind of odd to think about.
Was that like when Lindor becomes a free agent? They're going to have some trouble then.
Right, yeah. Yeah, 2023, the Indians will have 4 renewal options at 5-year each. So really, it's 2043 if they want it to be. But I guess they have, you know, a little – it gives them leverage to say, well, we can stay for another 20 years if the city passes more money to fix this and fix this. That's really what it is. They just hold it over your head and say they're going to leave.
Yeah. And that's what, I remember
it, only because Art Modell was a crook and was going bankrupt, even though he did a lot of good things for the city, I think, but he was still a jackass and a tool.
I saw the mayor of Goodyear, Georgia Lord, down at the Indians training complex. I think it was either pitcher and catcher like report day or like a couple days after that. I was down there watching the practices, and I saw her show up with an escort, and they went in there. And I think they were already starting negotiations on they may have been talking about this $10 million deal. I don't know. It was a while ago. But I think they're already starting negotiations on trying to extend it here. You know, extend the deal with the team. And I get partly nobody wants it because a stadium is kind of an albatross. There's a ton of money that you have to constantly keep putting up into it.
It's like having a giant boat that you never get to use.
Yeah, there's a lot of people you have to pay, so you have to keep making money off of it. And so for the Indians to lease either the Progressive Field or go to your ballpark or whatever, so if they're leasing Progressive, then it is owned by the city still. You know, so for them to lease it, it's way easier for them to just say, okay, we'll give you this money and we don't have to do anything with this. It's done. You do it and we'll lease you the money. At least that's how it works here, where the city controls it. I think they take more ownership in Cleveland. You know, but that's essentially how it works, you know, and that it gets their risks are alleviated greatly.
It's I don't know, it's not a great deal either way. I mean, like you said, it's city-owned stadiums are terrible, and if you can, it's exactly the same argument as if you can afford the car, you can afford the gas. Well, if the owners can afford the team, you know, afford the stadium, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think even if the league had to put in money, you know, to pay for a stadium or something, you know, like that, so much. And I guess I should know more about this. I guess Like, I don't know how many stadiums are public and how many stadiums are private.
I would imagine most are public.
I think most of them are. One of the spring training stadiums down here is private. I think more than one of them are private.
Wrigley Field's still private, is it not?
I think the Cubs stadium down in Arizona, which is called Sloan Field, is one of the only ones that is private. And I believe the Cubs own that. Whereas Hohokam, I think, which is where they used to play, where the A's play, is owned
That's
by the city of Mesa.
Yeah.
I think that was one of the big things. But yeah, the Cubs wanted the city of Mesa to put a ton of money up for Sloan. And I can't remember if they ended up doing it or not. I don't think they did. They might have, though. So maybe Sloan is city owned too.
I have to think spring training complexes have to be a bigger albatross than stadiums and in the regular, you know, major league city, because the product you're selling, you know, for Major League Baseball is only there, you know, February and March, and the rest of the year it's extended spring training or it's minor league games that don't really have any structure.
Yeah. But what about, I mean,
why? And then you have,
they still have Mahoning AFL. Valley, you know, they've got Mahoning Valley and in Lake County.
Right.
I mean,
they only use that, July, August, and part of September.
Yeah, and still those have got to be lease deals.
Yeah, so those stadiums are kind of, I mean, for the city, though, those are not great deals, because think of how little they're used, like, especially the spring training complex, because those are so important to every team organization. And like I said, you're only getting the meat of the product for 2 months out of the year. You can only, and they don't play every day at home. Like, how many home games do teams play in spring training? 14?
No, well, that is the case for some teams, but it's not for the Indians. The city of Goodyear, or the Goodyear ballpark, has a home game 30 straight days.
Oh,
because don't forget the Reds play.
I forgot about that, yeah.
And it's the same thing, like Surprise has the Royals and the Rangers, and Peoria has the Mariners and Padres. Glendale has the Dodgers and the White Sox.
Two spring training complex. Or
yeah.
Two team
and all,
complex. But it's still, it's only
four of those
February
are in
March. Medicine. Like,
most of them use them for other things. Peoria has this great thing that I actually got my car at the Peoria Stadium. They do like giant car shows there. Where they, not car shows, car sales, where because on the strip there, that the road that it's on, there's a bunch of car dealerships. So they'll have like a weekend or a couple weekends a year where they'll have all their extra used cars and bring them out there. They do soccer games. They do a lot of stuff up there in Peoria. It's just too far for me to travel.
That explains why Jose Ramirez's car was parked on the field last year.
That was a good year.
Do you remember that, though?
Yeah, I do. I think that was a couple years ago. Was it last year?
It was Mike Avilas who I think parked it.
They parked it at shortstop.
Yeah.
I think he was parking in the wrong spot in the parking lot.
I think he was. I think he was bad at parking. I think that he was not a good driver in general.
Oh, I think he was in somebody's spot that he wasn't supposed to be. I don't remember exactly.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, all this stuff flows together for me. Let's see.
The main point of this whole conversation was that city-owned stadiums and taxpayer-funded stadiums are not good, and they hold it over you.
If you are going to pay for something at any point in time in your life, if you're going to invest in something, you should get something out of it. And having a baseball team is not getting something out of it, because you buy tickets. That's how you buy the t-shirts, you buy the tickets, you buy the other merchandise. That is supporting your baseball team. The tax is not supporting your baseball team. The tax is them taking money from you that they don't need. So support your team. You deserve your team if you buy tickets, if you watch them on TV, which is essentially making the advertising that they pay for the TV rights worth more, so they get more money through that. Those are the ways you support your team. That you don't ever vote for a tax. ever.
Unless you really feel like paying it.
Unless, yeah, I guess if you feel like you are getting an equal benefit of what you are putting in, then you should vote for a tax. I wouldn't. I still say you shouldn't. But that's the only time you should. It's consider it an investment.
I mean, there's always studies saying what the economic impact is of having a stadium. You know, if here's what we project the city would do without the stadium.
But that's going to happen anyway. But that happens anyway. It doesn't matter if the city owns it or if the city doesn't own it. That economic impact will be there no matter what.
But that's how they hold it over you, saying, well, if you don't vote for this tax, they'll leave, and this is the economic impact that will be lost if they leave. That's what I'm saying. They hold it over you by saying
the
rest of this impact will be gone.
They're not leaving. Minnesota was the closest team we ever had. I guess Montreal actually did lose their team. But they really didn't deserve it.
They weren't leaving. They weren't going to go to another city. They were going to be contracted.
Yeah. And when they were talking about moving Minnesota, to me, that was the most real thing. And the team came back and won some games. And then they stopped that talk real quick.
What about Tampa Bay?
I don't. But that's the point, is that they didn't move and they didn't contract Minnesota. I don't think they're going to move or contract Tampa Bay.
No, I'm saying if they leave, because I think their stadium situation is really not good. It hasn't been. Same with Oakland. But they're still looking to stay in the area. They're not looking to leave the state. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, they're looking to stay in the same area. I don't think you're going to see a team move from a city anytime soon. I would be surprised if any team.
Yeah, no, it's not the NFL. The baseball values their traditions, even short traditions. I mean, like, they wouldn't move the Diamondbacks to the American League when it made sense more than anything else. Or the Rockies, one of the newer teams, they moved the fucking Astros because they had the ownership. They had the thing where they were switching owners and they put it in the deal that they had to switch. But they said they didn't want to move the Diamondbacks or Rockies because they had such a tradition in the National League. Whatever, so they care about that shit. And to me, even if they do, you can still watch them on TV. Any Chargers fans who are mad they moved to L.A., they'll still be on your local TV, and it's still only a few hours away if you want to go see them live. It's really not that big of a deal. I don't get why you would be mad that they moved a couple hours away. And I saw some people that were really mad, and they're burning jerseys and whatever. It's a couple hours away.
And really, if you drive 2 hours, how far is from LA to San Diego? Like 2 hours? I really don't know.
It's probably a lot longer than that because of traffic.
Okay, doesn't that take the tax burden off the municipality of San Diego?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're not paying the taxes for it in San Diego. And you can still watch them on TV, which is how you're going to watch them anyway. They had 60,000 people. There's millions of people who live in the area. Only 60,000 of you were going to the game anyway. The vast majority of you were watching it on TV.
So San Diego is the winner.
Just keep watching it on TV. Enjoy them. Call them whatever you want. Call them the California Chargers. It doesn't matter. Be happy about it.
San Diego Chargers of LA. Like the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, even though they're not in Los Angeles.
Yeah, just like that.
LA is the only city where that works, except for Tampa Bay, who plays in St. Petersburg in baseball.
Well, what about the New York Giants and New York Football Jets? Or is it New York Football Giants?
And they play at Meadowlands, and where is that, New Jersey?
Yeah, they play in New Jersey.
That's true.
Yep, see, it happens.
The Cavs, and the Cavs play in Richfield. That was really Akron more than Cleveland.
Yeah. Well, you got to use the big name, right?
Or you can use them all. I mean, why not just – I mean, if the Angels can fit it all in, why not?
Okay. All right, I think that's enough for today. There's a lot of stuff coming up on burningriverbaseball.com. I want to make sure everyone checks it out. I have a really fun post coming up where I grade every single Cleveland Indians draft ever.
Oh, wow.
Ever. All of them. I give them all grades. It's going to be really fun. I also have our five-year draft review that I always do. Not as fun.
We can talk about that in the next podcast.
We'll talk about that later. It's a bad year to be looking back 5 years. I got tomorrow. I have something on attendance. Everyone loves attendance stuff. So that'll be coming out Monday morning. Attendance is up, even though there's still somebody was complaining because they were like sixth from the bottom in baseball. It's still way, way up over the last few years. And I detail that with a ton of different numbers in there. And of course, we have the Dominican Summer League starting, and I'll have a preview on that as well. Everyone loves the Dominican Summer League, right?
Where games are played at 10:30 in the morning and scores aren't on the internet until 11 o'clock at night.
And did you know this year, the Indians have 1.3 teams?
1.3?
Yeah, pretty much. I did the math in the preview. The Indians have the DSL Indians, as always, which has some of your favorite players, including Wilbys Santiago, who I was told was cut, but apparently isn't.
Oh, he isn't? Wow.
And Gene Montero, and Jefferson Yanezi, which is the most ridiculous name ever, except for one of the guys. The DSL Indians also have a second team now called the Indians Brewers. Very creative. Where the Brewers have like 20 guys and the Indians have about 10 on the roster. And I really want to look up this guy's name right now. So it'd be like 1 second because it's the greatest name ever. The Indians Brewers team has a shortstop named Makisiondan Kelkboon.
Is he a Brewer or an Indian?
He's an Indian. I only wrote down the Indians.
Oh, wonderful.
And I've never hoped a guy made it more than that. Mac, Makisiondan Kelkboon. Makisiondan Kelkboon. I really hope he makes it. It's like one of those things where I make up nicknames for all these guys when they're in the AZL, and then like 5 years later, they're talking about making up nicknames for him in the majors. It's like, what are you talking about? I made a nickname up for that guy.
I can't wait to not write his name when he comes to the captains.
He'll make me bring, if I don't do Duty Wahoo for a couple of years, I'll have to start it back up again just so I could do a spelling bee on that one.
Oh, jeez.
All right, thanks for listening. This has been Burning River Radio Baseball Edition. I've been Joe Koblitz at Burning River BB. He's been Justin Latta at JL_baseball. Go Tribe. Hopefully the Cavs won too. But we'll see. Even if they don't, the Indians will certainly win the division, right? Maybe.
Yes. Still a thing.
All right. All right. Go Tribe.